Pulling up my notes.
Pulling up all those owns.
And our 1 million owns. Yeah. It's a new record.
Two chapter nines today, Tyrion and Cersei.
What could it all mean?
It almost seems like it pulling was planned this notes. Way.
We can't keep making that joke. I feel like we make that joke literally every single time.
It's funny
record.
To me. Hi, everyone.
We're back.
Tyrion 9, Cersei 9. You might have heard us mention that earlier in the podcast. A Dance with Dragons, A Feast for Crows, A Feast with Dragons. That's what happens when you put them all together.
But these two chapters, and we're going to dive into it quite a bit, have a ton of parallels. So I feel like anytime we've got siblings together, it's always going to make for a very interesting discussion. And for siblings as messed up in the head as Tyrion and Cersei are.
Oh, man, these two chapters were ridiculous. I didn't realize that Cersei's chapter was like going into it today in the preparation for, you know, reading and taking notes before we hop on Skype and have a conversation about it. I wasn't prepared for some of just the comic, just ridiculousness of her friends, her sycophants that are surrounding her. And just the things that they're talking about and how forlorn they are, how tough the world is for them right now in King's Landing.
It's truly next level. I feel like each chapter is getting worse and worse and spiraling more and more. And to me, this chapter with Cersei was, I think that all of these are kind of like a fascinating character study into somebody. I'm not going to say that like Cersei is like a psychopath or anything, but
she's figuring it out. Study. She's still working on things.
Yeah, but this chapter to me just seemed, with everything that happens with the singer and with Pycelle, all of that, it just seemed next level. So I'm excited to dive into it.
What do you mean by that? Next level, like just her, the volume is turned up and how much she's not on top of things, or maybe she, because she got violent and blood was spilt. Lots of blood was spilled.
Well, it's all of the combination of that while her inner dialogue. There was one moment that really caught my attention nearer to the end of the chapter when she's heading back to her chamber after everything that happens with Blue Bard. And she's thinking to herself, I need to be strong. I'm doing this for Tommen. This is for the realm. And a little bit before that, as he's being tortured, Cersei's like, I have to watch this. It's my duty.
Tywin
when in
watch.
Reality, she controls all of this. So, or she thinks she controls all of it. Yeah. So the fact that she thinks that what she's doing is morally her obligation and not even something of her being self-aware about, well, I'm going to torture these people to get the answers that I want. It's like she's past that point.
Wow. That is such a fascinating way to deal with what you're doing.
Right?
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing too. How about Qyburn just holding the razor blade? I'm imagining he's got some like magnifying eyewear that's maybe turned up and out of the way for a second. And he's like, sure, yeah. And just going along with everything as it unfolds. Anyway, that was fun.
I guess it's fun.
It was fun. We have to do the Tyrion chapter first, though. That's the order that we read in today.
That's all the Tyrion thoughts we have about Cersei. So
is on another ship.
Tyrion is on another ship. He's still with his girl, Penny.
Penny.
And we open up with them jousting.
It was a play-by-play in Tyrion's head where you would be sitting if you were sitting on the back of a pig and the way that the pig would feel underneath your legs if you were Tyrion's size and a pig was, I guess, around the size of a horse. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of fun for a moment. And then the description widened up a bit and I started to think about, I can't remember the words that George used exactly, but I started to think about the men, the sailors, and how rowdy they were and how they were shouting and how close each of them were to drunken violence and how quickly things could go very poorly and how the last show, not the last show, but the show that we think about the most, like the performance in King's Landing, how that was a similar situation, but this is even more depraved, and how he was thinking back to moments in Castle Le Rock when he was growing up and similar things were happening, or he was in moments of comedy when he was trying to perform for his family and he would think about how it would work and how, I guess he had a barometer of where he thought that pleasing his audience was, but it just comes nothing close to being out east and to be on the ship and to be dealing with the circumstances that they're dealing with and to be lowered into the position that he's in. And for so much danger to be around. It takes all of these circumstances to make a situation where Tyrion could get the kind of laugh that he got, where things are so real and have been so real consistently. Not like you bought tickets to a show and someone is really well trained and he's like, listen, I've been performing this around the country and I've got to tell you about all this really great stuff that I know is going to make you laugh. Like, that's not what this is. This is teeming with life and all of the problems that they're dealing with in real time. And there's so much danger and so much can go wrong. And I just thought, what a cool way to start the chapter.
Mm-hmm. Especially with Penny pleading him a little bit. There's a point when she's like, we have to make them laugh. I think George R. Martin literally says, we have to make them laugh. Penny said, pleading, we have to make them like us. Yeah. If we give them a show, it'll help them forget. And so it's exactly what you're saying. This is what they have to do for survival. And I think that that's the only thing that's going to get somebody like Tyrion to participate in an activity like this.
Isn't that fascinating, though? The stuff that the big people have to do to survive is so different than what these little people have to do to survive.
Well, and I think, sorry, I cut you off.
Please go on. I could keep rambling about this.
Well, I think that that's a major theme of this chapter. And I think that something I want to get into a little bit more as we continue to discuss the chapter is kind of what the purpose of this part is. I think a lot of people have questions about why Penny takes up, quote unquote, so much space. It truly is not that much space, but why Tyrion spends so much time with her and they don't understand her purpose. And I think that that's something we can talk about. But I think a big part of that is that Tyrion is learning what it means to be a dwarf outside of his own Lannister life and realizing he's had trials, he's had struggles on a completely different type of level and plane than somebody like Penny, and trying to figure out how to survive as a dwarf is a whole different set of learning curves for him than he is used to.
Yeah.
So, but something else I wanted to point out about that passage that I found really interesting was that moment when he says, for an absurd moment, he felt almost like Jaime riding out into the attorney field with lance in hand, his golden armor flashing in the sun. When the laughter started, the dream dissolved.
Great little moment, though.
It's a great moment.
You can find the fun and the lightness and the good and everything, even an absurd moment. It is absurd, but it's just how life is in the gulf of grief.
Well, and it made me think, we've talked about this before, I've thought about this quite often because it's just something that I find really interesting, is this relationship that all these siblings have with each other, but particularly Tyrion and Jaime, and how often they kind of think of each other when they're stuck in situations. I feel like, and I can't list off some specific instances, and maybe I can find a list compiled somewhere, but there are many moments in the series when both Jaime and Tyrion recall each other and think, what would so-and-so do? Or can you imagine if I was blah, blah, blah? Or I wonder what so-and-so would think about this. Like, there just seems to be a lot of opportunities for them to kind of reminisce about each other, which I just think is interesting and also bittersweet, given the fact that we don't know if they're ever going to be able to have any sort of relationship ever again, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't necessarily mean anything other than something that I think is just really interesting.
How about all that crazy stuff on the deck of the ship where the Red Priest M'Koro was like yelling prayers into the stormy sky?
Man, I love the weather.
There are so many moments in this chapter where, especially the one where Tyrion's like being surrounded by splintering wood and he's just cackling madly like, dear God, we're going to have to read that later. But there are so many moments in this chapter where you're just like when I was describing how real it was when they were riding into the tilt with the pigs and they were jousting each other. And it was like, okay, we better do this real because, you know, these are actual pirates or whatever. We're actually in a thing right now. This is not a game.
Of Thrones.
Yeah.
Sorry.
There's a person, at least, on the side of the ship who's convinced that his magic is real, and he's yelling it into the sky. He's directing this cloud of fury. That's, I guess, the Red God has something to do. That Roller was like, hey, I'm going to send you guys into the future, but I'm going to do it on my own terms. Also, he died.
Yeah, I was going to say a bunch of people died.
A lot of people died. The captain was flung from the ship once it started to split and broke both of his legs. He died a few days after. I connected those dots as I was reading. God, what a different kind of chapter.
Yeah, and it's a good way to kind of like look back on what that was for Tyrion. But this is such a different experience, especially as they're down in with Penny and all the animals, and you could just feel the ship rocking back and forth and the terror of the that's a terrible place to be.
But imagine a few weeks before when things are going awesome and it's been a bright day and everyone's pretty well fed and some of the captain's wine is still left, and then this gale starts to, you can see like the threat of it, right? The sails are moving in an awkward way and you're like, oh no. The air starts to taste different. It starts to get a little colder. And then this awesome storm comes through, just enough for you guys to get excited about and to basically flex all of your skills at sea. And then it goes away. What a good night that must have been.
Mm-hmm. Not this one. They get stuck in the eye of it and they think that it's over. Common mistake.
Common mistake. I think that the Red Priest on the deck thought, this is where I shine. This is
or
where...
he's like, he leaves at this exact moment because he knows they're in the eye of the storm. So he's like, let me pause it for a second.
Yeah, he's like, actually, I know more about meteorology than I do the Red God.
Yeah, and he's like, oh,
that's
I
why
have to go
been
now.
So confident at sea, yeah. Because I've been able to know how the storms are going to be.
Honestly, a sound knowledge of meteorology back then would have made you a god.
You would have felt like a wizard. They're like, this guy knows when it's going to rain. And you could threaten people ahead of time. You could be like, listen, you know what you could do. You could just manipulate people. That's half what the story's about. Jeez.
Big
Speaking
time.
Of that Cersei chapter. Oh, Lord.
I know. We're going to get to it, though.
This
Are
was
we talking about it right now?
This was awesome. This was Tyrion in Essos at its best, or at some of its best. I know that there's more. There's a storm where there's a guy standing on the ship yelling at the sky. And before he feels the moment of calm and he leaves Penny and George pulls your mind in one direction. There's this really high pitched voice from downstairs, like shrieking. And it's almost like you've been like punched in the head during a fight scene or something in the book, except he's actually just been down with Penny trying to ride out the storm and not die. And instead of turning toward that clamor, he decides to see what's happening on top of the deck. But in those small moments, he's able to create such space and also give us a lot of feelings, I guess, that he reserved for these moments where Tyrion was discovering how he fit into the larger picture. Like you were talking about earlier, how he is a dwarf and how his life has been so different and how learning that might kind of been the point and how the storm might kind of also be the point. And I feel like that's just the sort of way he's treating it as he's walking upstairs. It's like, what other reason would he have to be so brazen to understand what's happening? And then to also behold the priest on the deck and to have such detached feelings about it. It just doesn't seem like he's scared of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like Penny's there for a reason and he's there for a reason and might as well get drunk while it's all going down.
Right. Right. But there was, I'm trying to think of what was the part when they were talking about what had been seen in prophecy, basically. He was surprised that Mercoro had found him. Did not normally emerge till dusk. They have it. There you see it. Hugar Hill, God's wrath, the Lord of Light, will not be mocked. Tyrion had a bad feeling about this. I just clicked away. Tyrion had a bad feeling about this. The widow said the ship would never reach her destination. I took that to mean that once we were out to sea beyond the reach of Triarch, blah, 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 the captain would change course for Marine, or perhaps that you would seize the ship with your fiery hand and take us to Daenerys, but that isn't what your high priest saw, is it? He says, no, this is what he saw. And then with the storm and all that, right?
Yeah, he just assumed that the reason they were going to chart off course and go to Marine was going to be taken care of in a less metaphysical way. And when he saw that, oh, yeah, he's like, this is it. It's like, what? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's no like plotting or scheming or anything. It just is.
Well, it was a lot of plotting and scheming, but it was like kind of insanely chaotic and reckless. Like, here, we're just going to fling you into this bay, into this gulf, and hope that the pieces of your wreckage or whatever is left of you of this foolhardy errant mission will make it to Marine. Or not at all. Or they had a much better plan and we just have a really chaotic and reckless Red Priest aboard, which also makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I feel like makes just as much sense.
How do you feel about Penny and Tyrion?
The thing about Penny, I think it's valid to ask how we feel about her as a character, because I think that there are debates online about what the point of her is.
Really?
I feel like that's something that people talk about a little bit, because I think that some people don't appreciate these chapters necessarily. I don't know. This is just the things that I hear. But something that I was thinking about and looking up and like reading about, I don't know if you've ever heard this. I don't know what you think about this, but there's this theory that Penny is Tyrion's daughter.
You're always like detecting, like turned into a detective before these episodes, finding insane theories.
Because I love theories like this, because I totally don't think it's true. But there's this theory that Penny is Tyrion's daughter because she would be sort of ish in the age range. It's a little bit of a stretch, but maybe she would be in the age range, or Tyrion got her age wrong so she could be his daughter. And like some of the things that back this claim up are that Tyrion's description of Penny looks a lot like Tysha's, which, okay, Penny talks about her mom singing to her, and that's some Tysha saying to Tyrion. That's another point in the thing.
Oh, jeez.
Penny had a twin brother that she talks about, and that having twins may be a hereditary thing. And there's a couple other things, like Tyrion dreams about killing Tywin, and when Tywin says wherever whores go and Tyrion shoots, who is in front of him is Penny and not Tywin. Anyway, so there's this like tinfoil theory that Penny is Tyrion's daughter.
What would Penny be in that dream if you replace Tywin? Do you know what that was meant to be?
Well, this idea of wherever whores go would then point to Penny, and that's his daughter, like Tysha. I mean, I don't think that that's like a ton of evidence to back everything up, and I hate this idea of everyone being a secret relative, but
everyone's a secret relative.
I still thought it was kind of interesting.
I mean, that would be
wild.
It would be wild, and thank God Tyrion decided to, you know, be more aware of his surroundings and how the world is and who he is as a person before heading forward into the breach whenever he was kissed by Penny.
Yeah, before.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I think Tyrion at another time would have been like, fuck it, I like everything. What's up?
Right. He was kind of uncharacteristically sweet about that.
When he said an innocent kiss or a good kiss or a the idea was, here's a kiss in general. And a nice gesture, something that everyone deserves. The sentiment's not there without GRM's beautiful imagery, The softness of the language, but it's a nice sentiment. It's a really sweet thing.
Sweet. Until he thinks to himself, well, then he tells her, sorry, I can't kiss you, I'm married. And she's like, I understand.
Is that classic?
And I don't know.
All right.
And then he thinks, my perfect woman, Tyrion thought bitterly, one still young enough to believe such blatant lies. So it's like this, I think that the thing about this chapter is that Tyrion is making strides in his character development, but he still has this like underlying darkness that maybe is as prevalent as has been in earlier chapters, but is still obviously kind of the lining around everything he's doing.
There was a few moments in this chapter I thought so. Normally I don't think it, but he had this aside really early that was, I just seem, here it is. The wooden armor made rising awkward. This is when he was in the tilt. He found himself flailing like a turtle on his back. That, at least, set a few of the sailors to laughing. And here's an aside, or inner thought. I'm not sure what we call them. It's in italics. A shame I did not break my own leg. That would have left them howling. And if they had been in the privy when I shot my father through the bowels, they might have laughed hard enough to shit their breeches right along with them. But anything to keep the bloody bastards sweet. He had a few moments like that where it was just like very wordy and a little extra dark. And it's like, hey, man, did you have enough time to think that? Why not just go on with whatever you're doing?
He's making progress, but he's not over it.
He's still in it, though. He's like, maybe they should have been there when I shot my father through the bowels. And it's just like, all right.
We get it.
I just with the speed of all the stories around you, each point of view chapter you burn through when you're reading A Dance of Dragons, and maybe some of the cognitive effect of burning through a book that's sizable. Even if you're someone who reads a lot of big books, it's still something that you know you're going to get through. I think that maybe persistent atmospheres or persistent lessons. Like we're seeing this unfold with Tyrion, but we kind of know what's unfolding with him pretty early and we're seeing it happen. But at this point, we're 5 books into A Song of Ice and Fire and we kind of get how George lets things happen and we're seeing it happen.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of things are happening and it's that they're in some really cool places and there's things like giant turtles and meeting new people. It's a lot of fun. These storms. Crazy magic is a lot of fun, but I understand how people, how it all can kind of like blend together when you're reading through all the books. It's like the ships kind of are the same and the threat of dying in the same way is kind of there, you know, drowning because of bad weather or because of pirates or because of untrustworthy people on the same ship as you that you can't get away from, or you're in a barge with Illyrio being carried down the Valyrian highway. You know, you're kind of in that small room and you're drinking alcohol and you're having conversations
and having the same thoughts
and they're changing and that's cool,
but it is tedious for sure. I totally get that. Like, I totally agree.
I really like it though. When I was reading this chapter, I thought, man, I really hope that this isn't the one of those chapters that turns people off to Tyrion's arc in A Dance of Dragons.
Yeah, I think that for me Tyrion's arc is one of the more interesting because he is one of the actual main characters. And so I feel like this continues to be a little bit more interesting than maybe Cersei's plight or maybe the wheel spinning in Dorne, one could say. You know, like I feel like there's a little bit more room for error or room for kind of wheel spinning with Tyrion. Not that that's necessarily what is happening right here, but I do sympathize with the frustration of, okay, we get it. Like this, let's get on with it. I mean, we're very much far from the pacing of the first 3 books. So
that's true.
It's a challenge. So I get it. But it's like you were saying a little bit earlier, I just enjoy the atmosphere of these chapters so much that I'm down to let it slide.
If we were reading A Feast with Dragons at speed, it might feel just like instead of tedious, it might just feel like a really big book. It might retain the pace.
Yeah.
We'll have to do another reread where we like, all right, we're going to read it actually in real time and not split over months on a podcast.
Or it's like Les Mis has the actual published version and then the heavily abridged version. So you don't have to read about Parisian sewers for 500 pages.
They have stuff
pages.
About like the catacombs in there. Is that what it is? Like
yeah.
The with the bones and shit under the city.
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah. It goes on and on.
Do you know anything about that place?
From what I read of Les Mis,
there's like people who hang out
the abridged
in there.
Version. I know.
And there's people that go in there and they like it's a challenge. They're like, you know what? It's been a hard week and it's Friday, so I'm gonna go down there with my headphones on and go as far as I can.
My gosh.
Yes.
I read some article about New York. There was like whole civilizations is a broad term. There was whole groups of people living.
I've heard about that
in
too.
The like abandoned subway system.
I don't want to call them by the what I've, that sounds offensive, but I've heard about them.
Anyway.
Yeah, I don't know
all
them.
All I'm trying to say
anyone.
Is let's make an abridged version. Our next reading order challenge would be trim the fat. What does that mean?
I like the fat though, you know? I really do. This chapter was so much fun. The back and forth with Jorah, and I know it's not necessarily necessary, like those words together, but it's still fun.
Jorah. What did you think about Jorah's reaction to Tyrion saying out loud everything that truly happened.
I thought the Jorah was a real jerk, but
yeah,
you know, like we said about the sailors earlier, things are different out east. All right. It's dangerous. Got to watch what you say to someone like Jorah Mormont. You're going to have to spin a tale later about him. And, you know, you're going to need his friendship later. Maybe, I don't know, Tyrion, maybe you just told him the truth.
Tyrion hit the nail on the head, though, because Tyrion didn't know, like, he didn't know this, right? This isn't
He was about to call him Florian the Fool. And oh, he was like, that's too far.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. But he didn't know this beforehand, right? Like, this is something that he just figured out.
He had it in his head, I assume, but he's saying it out loud now. So he's... It's just one of those things where you just assume about Tyrion, you know, the stuff that he doesn't.
He just knows
his asides, instead of being filled with his plots, like when he was in King's Landing, it's just been filled with his regrets and the possibilities of how much darker his current moment could be in relation to what he's going through.
Right.
And so this was a little bit different. He was not talking to himself. He was, you know, trading blows with Jorah in a way that he can defeat him.
And Jorah played right into the giving away his thoughts and feelings.
Prophecy is like a half-trained mule, he complained to Jorah Mormont. It looks as though it might be useful, but the moment you trust in it, it kicks you in the head.
Wow, this is a perfect
segue. Who do you suppose
segue?
They'll carve up first, the pig, the dog, or me? He goes, the noisiest, I'd say.
My own, it's a Jorah moment, and I'm trying to save it.
For 19 days, they drifted as food and water dwindled. The sun beat down on them, relentless. Penny huddled in her cabin with her dog and her pig, and Tyrion brought her food, limping on his bandaged calf, sniffing at the wound by night. Tyrion got a big splinter through his calf. But he's Tyrion, so he'll probably be okay. We don't really feel those blows as much. Just like the captain dying. Not that sad. Are you sad about that?
No. A sail, she shouted. A sail, she shouted. There, do you see? A sail. And they've seen us. They have a sail. This time he kissed her. Once on each cheek, once on the brow, and one last time on the mouth. She was flushed and laughing by the last kiss, suddenly shy again, but it made no matter. The other ship was closing. A big galley. What ship is that? He asked Jorah. Can you read her name?
I don't need to read her name. We're downwind. I can smell her. Yeesh. Mormont drew his sword. That's a slaver. Now that's a cool way to end, though, with his sword coming out.
Yeah, I love him drawing his sword.
He's like, forget about all that shit about... Actually, don't forget all that shit. Remember it, but you need to grab a weapon.
Right. It's time.
A jaunt on the Stinky Steward
has come to an end.
Today's episode is brought to you by Simple Contacts. Simple Contacts lets you conveniently renew your contact lens prescription and reorder your contacts from anywhere in minutes. It's vision care for the 21st century. The Simple Contacts vision test is self-guided and takes less than 5 minutes. It isn't a replacement for your periodic full eye health exam, but it will save you so much time when you need to renew and reorder. It's designed by ophthalmologists, and a licensed doctor reviews every test, so you skip the office visit, but not the care. Simple Contacts has all the brands and types of lenses you're familiar with, so you never have to shop around to find your lenses at the best price. And best of all, Simple Contacts lets you save money. The vision test is only $20. Their contacts lens prices are unbeatable, and standard shipping is free. I've always fallen behind on my contacts prescription because of how difficult it used to be to keep contact lenses in stock, but when it's as easy as going online and having the prescription conveniently connected to the order, it makes picking out the cheapest brand that will last the longest time very simple, and I think you'll save both time and money if you order your contacts online. You can get $20 off those contacts at simplecontacts.com/owns or enter the code OWNS at checkout. That's simplecontacts.com/owns or enter owns at checkout to get $20 off your contacts.
Something that I think is really cool that ties these two chapters together is that conversation that Tyrion is having with Jorah that you said, when he says prophecy is like a half-trained mule. It looks as though it might be useful, but the moment you trust it, it kicks you in the head. Because deep into the Cersei chapter, she is telling, what's her name? Whoever she tells, I need to find it. But she's talking about her own prophecy that she received.
Oh, and, Tana and her mm-hmm. husband, Orton?
Yeah, it's when, so it's near the end of the chapter when Cersei goes back to her room and Tana's there and it's after the whole bath thing, they go to bed.
The whole bath thing.
They're in the bath.
It's A Song of Ice and Fire. We're supposed to, every time there's a bath, we're supposed to be like, oh yeah, the bath.
Oh, sorry. My bad. I didn't get the memo on that one. But so Cersei has a bad dream and she...
A bath dream.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, go on.
Cersei has a bath dream. No, that doesn't make sense. She has a bad dream about Tyrion.
She has a bath dream about Tyrion. Tyrion's getting
plot
all clean.
Twist.
No, she had a dream about Tyrion being all hairy and crazy and dirty and out of his mind.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it is. And can you imagine how painful it would be? Tell him what he did.
Cersei dreamt that she was down in the black cells once again, only this time it was her chained to the wall in place of the singer. She was naked and blood dripped from the tips of her breasts where the imp had torn off her nipples with his teeth. Please, she begged, please, not my children. Do not harm my children. Tyrion only leered at her. He was naked too, covered with coarse hair that made him look more like a monkey than a man. You shall see them crowned, he said, and you shall see them die. Then he took her bleeding breast into his mouth and began to suck, and pain sawed through her like a hot knife.
God. Good God.
Yeah, so it's not great. She wakes up from a dream, and she tells Tyrion about the Valonqar and everything that happened to her when she was a little girl, and this prophecy, and everything that we know so very well. And I just think that that's a perfect tie, because Tyrion is telling Jorah that prophecies, the moment you trust it, it kicks you in the head. And so much of what Cersei does is motivated by this event that happened early on in her life. And we're at the tipping point with her where the reasons why she's done things and why she's been so paranoid and worked so hard to protect her kids and her mind is because of this prophecy, and it's about to kick her in the head. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
It's not like it's a secret that you're wrong, Cersei. You got to look at the facts. You got to understand that when you're talking about evidence and confessing the truth, that you know that you also mean lies and the story that you want to be true so you can achieve your means. When you've got the blue bard in a dark room underneath the red keep and you're torturing him and filling his boots full of his own blood, you're not doing anything.
Right.
You're just not doing anything.
Answers.
Just wasting everyone's time and torturing everyone with grief and sometimes physical pain for just nothing is even happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's just...
Well, especially when you see the types of conversations that she's having the types of conversations that she's having with Sir Osney at the end, where she basically tells him exactly, not basically, she does. She tells him exactly what she wants him to confess. Why couldn't she have done that with Pycelle or with the singer, you know? She probably could have gotten away with that, at least with Pycelle.
Because she was going to fuck Osney, and she did not feel bad about that, because he was getting something out of it.
Yeah.
She knows what he wants. He's like, yeah, that all sounds fine, but this is what I want right now. And that kind of weird situation is exactly what you get when you do all of this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's so bleak, too.
You can keep the crown on. I like you in your crown. Oh,
God, that's so bleak. She's the queen. She's been directing people this whole chapter to do insane things for lots of different reasons. Maybe she's convinced herself that it's because of her authority. I'm not sure. But after that moment, after he reaches and grabs her and takes what he wants, do you think that she still feels that way?
I think that she is doing it because she thinks she has the moral obligation to her children. I don't even think that it's an authority thing anymore for her.
Well, that would be a pretty strong motivation.
Yeah, I think that in and of itself is good enough.
So she's basically justifying Like, it's difficult what she's dealing with the Blue Bard. And she does, even though she's a part of what's happening, you know, she does feel, you can, there's, it's so weird to talk about it because she's basically twisting the blade herself.
Right. That's what's confusing, is she feels, as I was saying at the beginning of our episode, is she feels bad, but she's the one who's doing it.
What do you think?
She's so delusioned to the point that he didn't do it. He didn't do anything. Very obviously. But she thinks that he has, or someone must have, or whatever. And she feels like she has to continue to go through with it, where she very much does not have to.
Do you think she thinks that she has? Like, do you think that Pycelle told that story for real? Or that was, maybe she did have an aside with Pycelle and she was like, we're just going to pretend in this conversation that I'm really mad at you for killing Giles Rosby. And also, I need you to pretend that you found, or that Marjorie has been asking you for moon tea.
It was his cough, by all the gods. Pycelle stumbles.
I mean, it was his cough, right? I think we can all agree that
100%
too much double grass.
1,000%. That's not even a question. But this whole Marjorie thing is super interesting to me. I'm curious what you think too, because I feel like Pycelle, I think that there's a couple different situations that could be happening. And the first is that Pycelle is telling Cersei exactly what she wants to hear instead of the truth, because,
like, exactly. There could have been a number of other things you brought her, but for God's sakes, you got to say moon tea?
Yeah, like, that's exactly what she wants to hear.
Jeez.
Two, something that I think might be interesting is maybe Margaery is using Pycelle to try to get Cersei to publicly accuse her in the hopes that she can clear her name and, like, Cersei can be publicly scorned or something.
Or it's Lady Olenna.
Yeah, like, it's part of this whole, like, Tyrell movement happening in King's Landing, and that this is just a piece of it, and they're using Pycelle as a pawn.
It just seems like such an obvious thing, though.
Well, Pycelle has always been so much in the Lannister camp that there just seems no way to me that Margaery is...
Tywin's dead now, though.
Well, that's true. That's true. Well, that's another thing. But I don't think Margaery is stupid enough to tell Pycelle something confidential, unless, A, she's trying to use it to get Cersei, or B, Pycelle has been not coerced, but convinced to come over to the Tyrell's quote-unquote side, because exactly like you said, he was super loyal to Tywin, and Cersei isn't really very nice to him.
Yeah, she's not only not nice to him at all, and hasn't been nice to him pretty much always, but she also has Qyburn now on the Small Council, and I half expected her at some point to make him Hand of the King.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, come on, you're making a joke out of the Citadel. What if the Tyrells were like, listen, we're going to really establish honor back into the order. Beards will be celebrated in the capital.
It just, like, stroke the heck out of his ego.
Young women will be provided to you day and night.
Yeah, that scene of him.
Oh, jeez.
Well, but so that's exactly it. I think this Margaery thing is, this Margaery / Pycelle thing is super interesting, because Pycelle is somebody that I think Cersei kind of takes for granted.
Do you think that Margaery might actually be asking him for moon tea just to plant this?
Or maybe.
Do you think that he's a part of the conversation and he's like, he's acting like he just gave up? Because holy shit, if he just gave up that info on the queen, the king's wife?
Wife. I am the queen.
Can you imagine that? Think about that. He just gave her information to Cersei that could get her killed, executed.
That's why murdered. There's no, like, Margaery is so much smarter than that. She has to be, and she has been, to get all the way where she is. And not just Margaery, but her whole fam. I mean, the Tyrells are not stupid. So I feel like they are going to be so much more cautious than that. That's why it has to be something other than what it appears to be.
There's just no way. Pycelle would be such a lark if they planted that info, and within, you know, the first opening page or two of the chapter, he's giving away the darkest secret that his new friend has.
Mm-hmm.
Like, holy moly.
Right. Or he's making it up because he knows that that's something that would make Cersei happy. That's also very possible. That did happen
in this chapter with the blue bard. He did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Man, how was that chapter? I felt like George probably wrote that in one, or that chapter, that paragraph, after he starts confessing about stuff that's fake. I felt like he wrote that in like one go. The editor, no one touched it. He was just like, oh, I've been waiting my whole life for this. Just how viscerally someone would just let go and just start making up all this insane shit about the people they had seen around them in the rooms. He was just describing Marjorie and her cousins and in these more illicit sexual acts all over the room and in different ways. I'm imagining it more carnal than it actually was, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that's what, so cool.
And then Cersei's like, no. Too many high profile people in there.
She's like, back it up. Those details they're not going to believe you guys had a monkey in there.
Yeah, let's amend a few things to make it seem more believable.
That's fucking awesome.
That's why I'm like, why didn't you just feed him the information up front? God. And then instead of having to torture him,
for God's sakes, just give him money. Just give him money. Remember what he said? He said he was hoping to earn favor at court. Okay? Give him favor. Like, does it, if you feel bad about what you're doing, if this is because of what Hannah said right now, who is your best defender indirectly, I don't know if she means to be, but at least in this moment to me, if that's the deal, then why not just, you know, maybe not cut his nipple off?
Yeah. And don't feel guilty about it. It's just so interesting and just so like convoluted that
everything else that you did.
Yeah.
We talk about Ramsay Bolton like he's an unmentionable, like we can't say his name. Ramsay Bolton's a terrible person. They flay people in the North. We get it. We understand that. What he did to Theon, making him reek, is a really bad thing. But I don't have enough conversations with my friends about how Cersei and Qyburn filled a guy's boots full of blood. And that's just the least of it. That's just part of what we had. That's just what we read.
It's terrible.
This is Cersei's penultimate chapter in A Feast for Crows. And I know we talked early in this reading order about her story just getting dark and unfolding. I would always see the Tower of the Hand exploding and burning in that way, and her standing out there drunkenly and seeing the glow of the flames. I always kind of see that in my head. But this right here is going to, her and Qyburn, just almost like it's a campy little TV show down in this room with the blue bard at first. And the way that she's lying to herself creates this, the dissolution of reality where it just does, it doesn't seem dangerous because it's so fantastical. She's just lying to herself so wildly. You hear nightmarish music, you know, like that's going to replace the thoughts of Cersei's chapters for me in A Feast for Crows until we reach the next chapter and we see a body swinging.
Right.
That's just like, it's one of the reasons why I think this one is my favorite so far out of the five, is just how unexpectedly it takes you in this gothic direction. And it's mostly, I mean, there's elements of pain, but it's mostly the audacity of the characters just letting it happen to them so easily. That bothers me. Like, all of this could have been helped. There was no need for all this.
Big time. It could be a completely different story. But Cersei is not long for this high plane that she's riding on.
Her friends, we don't even know who they are, where they come from. Is just, she just pulled some side characters out of the eaves, you know, like the people who stand on the side in those scenes when they're inside of the throne room. She just picked someone that would be most likely, you know, the person who was there around the edges that she could convince most easily. Do you remember how she was getting closer to Taena early in her chapters in Feast for Crows? And now she's just all out telling her how the torture's going.
Yeah. And telling her all these deep, dark secrets. It's because she has nobody else.
That's sad.
It is sad. It's just, it's interesting because there's just a lot of, this is so stupid, but there's just a lot of depth to what she, I think that like we forget with the TV show, it's so very surface level and it's like, oh, Cersei's just doing wild stuff. But when you really see it in the detail of the way she hypes herself up and the way she's having these conversations, and like you're saying, the people she's surrounding herself with that are straight up randos, it only makes Cersei's situation look even more
desperate,
intricate, and desperate. Exactly.
They're so random. Exactly, they continue to be random. I love what George R. R. Martin is doing with these people. It's like at this point, you know, this is the fourth book in his masterpiece. The people that are with Cersei, they're pretty important people, especially if they're recurring characters. Someone sleeping with her.
He's still a rando.
They're all randos.
They're all randos.
Jaime's gone. He's out to figure out his life and fall in love with another woman. Probably already has. Jeez.
Shut up, Brienne.
Jeez.
But it is what it is. We can't help her. We're getting close to her downfall. And so it's been a long journey of her continuing to one up herself as she continues to make worse.
She gives the hand of the king. She gives the hand of the king to the girl's husband.
A literal rando.
It's the closest guy to her. They're like, well, I would have made the girl, but they can't make a girl the hand. So the guy that's married to her. I mean, it all makes sense logically, but imagine what it looks like to her uncle. Or just like any normal level person, any normal level, just any level-headed person, just anyone.
Any other rando.
I was trying to think of like what class of people, but that doesn't really, that's not fair because it's so random in A Song of Ice and Fire. There's people from all over.
There's one other thing that dumb decision she makes is she tries to get Pycelle to tell Lord Giles Ward that his last dying wish was to give all of his money to Tommen.
Well, duh.
Which is just like,
isn't that okay. Exactly what you'd like to do?
Yeah, it's super convenient.
Yeah, she's like, I'll give him some of the money from it. It'll be fine.
Great political maneuvering.
You know, we sound really smug, to be honest. Like, what if it doesn't matter? And what if this
it does, though.
Yeah, but what if it doesn't matter? And what if it was going to fall apart on her anyway? And she might as well feel like she's, I don't know, making something happen.
I mean, I guess. But I think that she would be, if she was, I mean, look at somebody like Sansa, who's also doomed to fail, who hasn't failed. Cersei was absolutely put in a position to fail.
So you're saying that she needs Peter Baelish.
Yeah, to be whispering in her ear. She has plenty of people whispering in her ear. No, she just needs to have made every decision differently.
Oh, okay. That's, you know, a normal thing. Just make all of your decisions differently.
Easy fix.
I think that she should make Qyburn king. And we could see what happens.
Go on.
Yeah. I don't know exactly like what his first move would be, because he seems to be really into what he's doing. Like, it's not just a hobby. Like, I think he gets a lot of personal satisfaction and he feels important, you know, like he matters when he's going places that people have never gone.
First, he's opening up his candy shop. Next stop, franchise.
Yeah.
So that he's got some income coming in, passive income. And third stop is...
Gotta get that passive income.
Yeah, him continuing on his experiments. All of Cersei's inner issues aside, some of her little comments that she has as she's dealing with people are still pretty hilarious. And so I think we have to start with Owens with Cersei before we go back to Tyrion, because my favorite moment of maybe the whole, well, that's not true, because my Tyrion own made me laugh out loud too. But near the end of the chapter, when after Tommen talks about, like earlier, Tommen talks about how he wants to learn from Sir Loras and how they're praying for him every day. Near the end, she thinks to herself, Sir Loras still clung to life, comma, annoyingly. And I thought that was so great.
She was just like, hey, flat out, he's not coming back. I've had a hard day. He's not coming back. If the day would have been different, I would have maybe been more hopeful, but not today.
It's like when you like have your, like when your family dog is quote unquote sent to a farm. He's like, he's never coming back.
I saw that on TV in the background today. Someone was talking about that in a TV show, like how they were described. It was on The Good Place. How they were described, like where their dog went after they died. That is really weird. And they called it a farm, dude.
Well, because everybody was fed that line.
But if you live on a farm like I did, you just see dead dogs all the time. It's like, well, yeah, you got to dig another hole.
I was a city girl and I'm like, ooh, a farm.
That's where they send dogs, right? Like, yeah, they send them there to get buried just out of the tree line.
No, they send the dogs to run on the fields. Oh, you're That's right. What everybody always says, to live free.
My Cersei own is to Taena.
Does someone like Taena think that Cersei is going to do great things? Does she see a longevity in all of this, you know?
I don't think so. I don't think it matters.
Yeah.
She'd probably be fun to hang out with for those reasons, though. So own to her.
Sweet.
Hey, Hannah, what is your Tyrion own?
Hey, Hannah, what's your Tyrion own?
Yeah.
You said that was so funny.
Hey, thanks.
My own for Tyrion goes to Jorah.
Whoa.
Who claims to have slept through the entire storm.
Wow.
There's no way he slept the whole time.
What a dick.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, yeah, I slept the whole time.
Yeah, they're like covered in bruises. And like, for some reason, Penny was like, she was like, oh, is this what's happening? Puking. I'll kiss him. And, you know, like such awkwardness and weird stuff happening because like they might die and who knows? And Tyrion's losing his mind. And we're like, this is such a special chapter. Jorah, what do you think?
He's like, I was asleep the whole time.
I don't know.
I don't know. So funny. So mean. And so hilarious.
My own is to Penny's pig, Pretty, for being there to remind us that everything is okay until they start killing their pets and eating them.
Till they start sending their pets to a farm to live out the rest of their days.
That's it for us.
Those are our owns.
You should probably read it.
Wait, I don't know how to say this word.
I don't either. I think it's...
Let's look it up.
It's like kvetching. I mean, I get the way it feels, but I don't know how to say it. Vetching?
Catching? Just complain. I'm listening to it. Kvetch. Kvetching.
Got it.
Heck yeah. At B to Brienne on Twitter says, for all their kvetching, Cersei and Tyrion's chapters mirror each other almost perfectly. They're cruising along more or less fine when an act of God / Cersei's hubris throws everything off the rails. Owen goes to them, being two sides of the same loathing coin.
Bringing it all back.
Great tie-in.
Thank you, Brienne of Tarth, for sending an own this deep in the off-season. We appreciate your dedication to your noble cause.
And if you want to send in your own owns or your own thoughts, feelings, etc., you can find us on Twitter at Game of Owns, or you can find us on Instagram at Game of Owns, or you can send us an email to contact@gameofowns.com.
Just wanted to say thank you to everyone for listening. It is November and it's almost next year.
And you know what else is coming up is Fire and Blood.
If you're in the tri-state area,
come on down to Rick's used car lot.
Fire and Blood.
That's what it sounds like.
And to everyone listening, if you're not doing anything on November 19th, at 7:30 p.m., you should join us at the Landmark Lowe's, New Jersey, or I think it's just called Jersey Theater, because George R. R. Martin will be there to talk about his new book, Fire and Blood. I think that we're all getting signed books as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure if there are any tickets left.
There better be, because
I have a link for it directly in front of me. Hannah is still waiting on that special pass given to her that will be treated and pressed onto a bloody coin. But we hope that some of you are already coming. And if you're not coming and this is something that you think that would be really cool to go to, but you're on the fence and a lot of excuses are coming up.
Are you talking to me directly? No.
I'm saying like if there's still any tickets left and you're thinking of reasons why you shouldn't go, you should just go, because it's happening right now.
It's going to be fun. And especially like we're saying, we're in the off season. We're just starting to get ramped up for next season. There's no sign of Winds of Winter. Unless, depending on who you talk to, there are some signs, but there's no real signs. And so this is a good opportunity to kind of get together and celebrate. And with that, we will be back next time with our continued reading order of A Feast with Dragons on afeastwithdragons.com. And the next chapters we have are The Turncloak and The King's Prize. So both not character named chapters.
That's it, everyone. Thank you for another episode.
Yeah, and we'll see you guys then.